This podcast is brought to you by Viva Global. Experience the difference with Viva. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio.
We're trying to catch the jet snapping. Castro with the step over the feet.
With thanks to Fox Sports, hello and welcome to Evenings on FNR. You're with Louise Taffer and Athos Syrianos. Yes, if you are just joining us, Perth Glory's 15-year wait is finally over, thanks to Ivan Franich's 65th-minute strike, which was all Glory needed to lift that silverware that they have been starved of since February 2004, back when they won the NSL, Athos.
Hi, Louise. Yes, a great occasion for all the whole football community over in Perth. A fun fact, when Perth actually won their last trophy, it was Ante Milicic who was the top scorer in the NSL that season. So that's how far back it dates. And they're only halfway there. They were part of the journey that is season 2018-19. There is, of course, the championship, which is next on the agenda, I'm sure, for Perth Glory.
And joining us now is Perth Glory's CEO, Tony Pinata. Tony, thank you so much for coming on Evenings on FNR, and a massive congratulations.
Thanks, Louise. Thanks, Athos. Yeah, it was a good night. Sort of long time coming here for Perth, and really wrapped to get it done.
And finally, some silverware. It has returned to the West. Where's the Premier's plate at the moment? Have you got it at home?
It's been floating around the office a little bit. People wanting to have photos with it, but I've managed to take it off Seiji last night because I thought he was going to take it, around the streets of Perth. it's in our trophy cabinet at the moment, where it's proudly displayed.
And how were you watching the match last night? It couldn't have gone any better. It was exciting. It was the 1-0 win. I'm sure there would have been plenty of nervous fans heading in, and they would have been quite relieved heading out.
Yeah, look, I made a comment actually to the Fox commentators who sit in the box next to us, saying that I could just sense just the stress of not only the, everyone, the fans were so stressed. It's the only time I've seen them in the whole, 13 games that we've played at home, that they were so anxious. And the players tended to sense that as well. And, when we hit the bar and missed a couple of chances, it was just building. So it was good to get into halftime, nil all, and Popper allowed to calm the players down, keep playing the way we've been playing, and, magical pass by Castro to Ivan Franich, sort of just lifted, the roof down, to be honest. It was fantastic.
And has the celebrations continued? We saw Tony Sage was absolutely thrilled to have finally taken home some silverware, and, no doubt, rightfully so.
Yeah, look, I think Tony celebrated for everyone. But I think he managed to get home, to be honest. But, we went out for just a quiet dinner with some of the football staff, and, we were home early, and, we enjoyed it. But we know that, today starts a new challenge, and that's to get to the grand final and to win it. And we want to host the grand final here at Optus Stadium on the weekend of May 18, May 19.
And, Tony, we'll get to the grand final shortly, but you've only been there for a short period of time, like Tony Popovich. Does it make it all the more rewarding, given you've been able to achieve success within your first season?
Tony Popovich and I basically were announced, we were appointed on the same day. We announced at last year's MGP, which is, a few weeks, it'll be 12 months. We set the I suppose, the blueprint of what we wanted to achieve, together with, Jacob Burns, who's the football director, and the three of us, said, this is what we want to do. This is how we're going to do it. I mean, you need to rely on a bit of luck, and you know, we recruited well and built everything, from day one. And yeah, it's a bit surreal to be standing there last night accepting the trophy, but we'll take it.
And we know Tony Popovich and the team, of course, so will not rest. There still, of course, is the final series and other major trophies still to play for. But, Tony, drawing on your previous experiences in winning silverware with Sydney FC, how important is it from a cultural perspective to really celebrate and acknowledge these achievements along the way?
Yeah, look, it is. I mean, one of my favourite sayings is sport is champagne and razor blades, and there's more razor blades than champagne. In any sport, so you need to take time, take stock of success, and we did last night. The A-League, well, all sport in Australia is built around winning the grand final. So now we know that the job, as you said, is half done, but it's a great piece of silverware. It gets us to Asia with a guaranteed spot now for next season, which is something that the clubs strive for many, many years. But, you know, we were back in the office early this morning and we keep going. You know, we know that there's still another five games to go, or four games to go for us, to be honest, with two home and away and then the two final games.
That's exactly right. Plenty of football still to be played and some great football was on show on the weekend. We are, of course, joined in the studio by Tony Pignata, the Perth Glory CEO. And, Tony, how does this achievement, winning the Premier's Plate, compare to winning the first Premiership with Sydney FC?
I don't know. It feels the same. It feels a... Sydney FC was a long time, and we went through a difficult period as well. So that was rewarding and satisfying to win the double. It's special here in Perth. I mean, wherever you go, everyone speaks about the NSL days, etc. And they were fantastic days here. The crowds they got, but I'm wrapped for our owner Tony Sage, who's put in his heart and soul and his hard-earned money into this club over the last 12, 13 years, and it was rewarding for him to be part of the festivities last night, and it was great for him and his family to achieve it, and I'm wrapped for him, to be honest.
And it really seems like that is almost the key to success, for a club to have that top-down effect.
Yeah, look, I think so. I think he's very, very passionate about the game. He's the sole owner, and he puts his money in every year. So it's great to have a devoted owner like that. And we've pushed him a little bit this year in trying to stretch the budget a bit and get the players and get the quality what's needed. And he hasn't said no. So, and that's a reward for him as well.
And you touched on the fact that it's not over yet. The big task comes now to keep the players all focused with just two games to go in the regular season, plus a week off after that. Do you think Popovich will be able to deal with that, and keep the players on track?
Oh, look, I think the players, I was talking to some of them today. They know what needs to be done. They celebrated a little bit last night. We stayed out in the pitch and in the rooms for a while, and then went up to the members bar as well. So they know what's needed. So I don't think Pop will have much problems in terms of convincing the players what's needed to for the rest of the campaign and the final series.
And Perth Glory's first final will be at home, and one of the benefits of finishing on top of the table, the first semi-final will be in Perth. Tony, will that game be held at Optus Stadium or at NIB Stadium?
No, it'll be at HBF Park, which is now the former NIB. It'll be there. And, we're expecting the game to probably be the first of the two finals, given that you finish on top, you tend to get the extra day's break. But we haven't received any details about the game. But we know that we'll have the first week off, and then it'll be the weekend after our first final at HBF Park.
And, Tony, we saw Wande and also Jason Davidson come off last night. Do we have an injury update on either of them?
They weren't too bad afterwards. They were walking around quite freely. They'll have scans today and then be assessed. We've got a short turnaround and we've got travel to Sydney on Thursday. So the medical staff are being busy, but the players have sort of got their recovery day today. And medically, they'll all get assessed, and then we'll see how that goes over the next 24 to 48 hours.
And you mentioned the club has now obviously qualified for next year's Asian Champions League. Would that be the next big thing on the list to conquer Asia?
Oh, that would be nice. $4 million prize money. Wow, that would be fantastic. Look, definitely. I mean, the A-League teams haven't done very well in the last few years. And, it is a difficult competition. It is hard to, just from a travelling point of view and backing it up between A-League games and then going to play Champions League. But, Pop has won it before, so why not? It'll be a fantastic achievement, not only for Perth Glory, but also for the A-League. So, we're going to definitely do what's needed.
And considering that it's currently being played right now and we're seeing players like Oscar and Hulk and Paulinho coming to Australia and performing superbly, how motivated is the club and the players to get to Asia and really do well in the competition, considering it's a campaign that Perth Glory are yet to be involved in?
I think everyone talks about the quality of the players in the Asian Champions League, and you've got players like Iniesta playing there, as you said, Oscar, Hulk, Paulinho. They're massive players that have played in the best leagues in the world. So, for our players to play against them and mix it with them, it's something that they're looking forward to.
Yeah, no doubt. And did you manage to talk to Ivan Franić after the game? I'm sure he would be absolutely thrilled.
Yeah, I did. I said it was a nice nutmeg on Mossy, and Mossy had a blinder of a game. He was pulling saves everywhere. The save he did off Joel Kinesi with his foot, and then the save he did off Davidson. I thought, oh, here we go. It was a great ball from Castro, and Ivan read it really well, and sort of just pushed it under Mossy as he advanced. So I think he celebrated very well. So he was a happy man last night.
And we've spoken a lot about the success on the field this season, and no doubt the team has been the best throughout the whole campaign. But what have been some of the highlights for you behind the scenes off the field? Because naturally when the team performs well on the field, off the field, there's just as much success.
Yeah, look, and that's something I said to the staff, that it takes a whole club to win championships. It's, the players are out there and they're the showpiece of the organisation, but there's a lot of work done behind the scenes, from our medical department to membership, to our commercial team, to our designers. Everyone is a whole part of this process, and everyone should feel part of it, which is what we're trying to do. Because our hashtag is One Glory, and it's about making sure that we're all together in this. Whether you're the chairman, CEO, or whether you're administration assistant, we're all in this together. We're all on the same level, and it's all about the ultimate game, and that's to lift that trophy at the end of the season.
Well, Tony, thank you so much for joining us on Evenings on FNR, and once again, a massive congratulations on taking out the Premiership and the Premier's plate. And we look forward to having another chat with you sometime soon, maybe when you've won the grand final.
That's a date, no problems.
I expect you in the studio then, Tony.
I'll fly in, don't worry.
Looking forward to it. Take care.
All right. Take care. Thanks, guys. Bye.
That is Perth Glory CEO Tony Piñata joining us after their success at the weekend, following their narrow 1-0 win over the Newcastle Jets, which was all enough and all that was needed for them to take out the Premier's plate and finally get some silverware back to the West, which has been starved for many, many years, 15 to be precise.
Yeah, was there ever any doubt, though, that the Glory would go on and win this game. We know that since Sydney FC did not win the Sydney Derby,
they practically handed it to them.
Well, not that they handed it to them. Perth still has to go and win the game against Newcastle Jets. And on the other hand, the win for Glory means that Newcastle is completely eliminated from the finals race. So the top six is locked in. There are still plenty of permutations. Fourth to sixth is another subplot altogether. But we'll touch on that a bit later. Perth Glory lift the Premier's plate. I think it's a massive monkey off the back for them, because generally when you're so close and the pressure builds, and Tony, I think, hit the nail on the head. You could sense the anxiety and the intensity within the stadium. And I think having Tony Popovich there, who's been there and done that domestically and continentally, would have been massive for the players. Just knowing that they could look over to the bench, and I'm sure Popovich would have been very calm and collected. I think that gives so much reassurance to the players and takes a lot of pressure off them. And then, as we saw, they had no problems going to win the game in the end.
No, and I think it's a reflection of Popovich himself, because Perth Glory this season are very well disciplined both in defence and in attack. And I think it's just outstanding what they've managed to achieve in such a short space of time. And it's fantastic to see that they have taken out the Premier's plate. Now, though, is the really tough task of taking it all the way and taking out the A-League Grand Final. Can they do it?
Well, of course they can do it. Anyone can do it. They will run into some formidable foes, though. Melbourne Victory and Sydney FC, who have been in the finals for a long, long time and know exactly what to do come this stage of the season. You've also got teams like Adelaide United, who have always been in and around the finals. So plenty of experience there, but an exciting challenge ahead for Perth Glory, and it'll be an exciting few weeks as well. Interesting to see as well what they do these next 2 weeks, whether they look to perhaps rest some players. It'll be quite a test for them, considering they've never been in this position before. I'm quite intrigued to see how Tony Popovich approaches the next game in Sydney, considering they'll have to travel for that, whether he leaves a few players at home to maybe recover if there are any niggling injuries among the squad.
I think that'll be the case. We heard from Tony Popovich after the game, and he said it's back to the drawing board. We're going to see who has injuries and who's got what, and then work on the squad for the upcoming game against Sydney FC, which, as you've touched on, is away. So we know that Jason Davidson came off last night. Mm-hmm. His knee didn't look too good. Tony Piniata just said that, you know, nothing serious as yet, but we'll wait to see what happens there. That would be a huge blow in itself on the cusp of finals.
Well, not only is he one of their best defenders, but he's one of their best attackers as well. How many times does he put balls into the box and they've scored off them? So he's such a pivotal player for them, and he's one of their most important players too. So fingers crossed that he can be fit and firing, ready for the finals.
And we also saw Wande come off. I'm not sure at the extent of his injury. And Chris Economides is still recovering
from
his shoulder. So Chris should be returning this week. But again, not what you want heading into finals, especially for Perth Glory.
Not at all. And their opposition this coming week will be Sydney FC, who didn't get the job done against the Wanderers, and it leaves the door slightly ajar for Melbourne Victory to perhaps overtake them in second place. And considering that Sydney did so well to defeat Victory last week, should they fall to third, I think would be a massive disappointment for them.
Okay, we'll get there. The Sydney Derby ended on a nil-all draw. I think Sydney FC controlled the first half, but it's much of the same story. They haven't been as clinical as they could have been. Take a listen to the highlights, then we'll come back and analyse it.
Sarah snips past one, threads it through for Alex Brosk. That is a superb finish by the Sydney FC skipper. And Sydney FC take the early lead. The Derby's all-time leading goal scorer strikes again. Number six for Alex Brosk. Fabio Hare went low, it's gone in. Courtesy of a deflection, the Wanderers are all square.
With thanks to Fox Sports, sorry, I said nil-all. It actually ended 1-1, which is what I meant. But Sydney FC, they controlled the first half, but they weren't really convincing, especially with the Western Sydney Wanderers. I thought they had some players who were, you know, doing some outstanding things, like Galafoco. He was brilliant.
Yeah, well, a lot of the Wanderers players are ultimately playing for contracts at this stage of the season, so there's plenty to play for, even if you're not in contention for finals, as we discussed in the lead-up to this game. And the Wanderers, January going forward, have actually performed quite well. They've turned their season around. They got themselves into a mathematical finals contention, albeit it was just too little too late. So a disappointing result for Sydney. They would have wanted to bury the Wanderers, albeit they did play Champions League during the week as well. So that may have had a hindrance on their performance, but I'm sure they'll go into these next few games with the strong intentions of getting maximum points and really securing a second place finish.
You're right. Third game for Sydney FC in just 6 days, possibly added to some of the players feeling a bit tired given the tight turnarounds. But I just think it now is not the time for Sydney FC to be charitable. They need to be getting max amount of points where they can in these final rounds if they want to secure second place in the A-League and have that home semi-final.
Yeah, well, at least finish as close to Perth Glory as possible. I think Sydney FC want to finish quite strongly. Alex Brosk said that while we can finish second, the highest we can finish is second on the table, they really want to put the pressure on Perth Glory this week to and really make them earn it. Because, and in saying that, we know that Perth Glory won't be taking this game lightly despite having won the premiership. So this will still be quite an entertaining contest. And now there's that subplot in the top six as to who finishes where, because victory in Sydney can trade places, and Melbourne City can finish fourth, or Adelaide can finish fourth, and City actually do play Wellington Phoenix to ultimately decide who could finish fourth or fifth.
One player for Sydney FC who hasn't really impressed me since his arrival is Reza Guşanışad. Now, I don't know if you feel the same, but he just can't find the back of the net, Athos. He butchered his opportunity in the 90th minute, a golden opportunity to seal the 3 points for Sydney FC. He also had options to his right, didn't maximise them. I'm just questioning his quality at the moment, to be honest.
I thought he had one of his better games during the week in the Champions League, and generally he hasn't had a lot of time to adjust to the A-League. Had he had a full pre-season under Steve Corica and with his teammates, I'm sure the results would be chalk and cheese. But he's got to do quite a bit in a short space of time, and I think they're really banking on him being a real X factor come finals time. And they are, of course, not completely out of the Asian Champions League just yet, although they will need a win this week if they want to progress to the next round, that's for sure.
Brandon O'Neill unfortunately gave away that free kick, which ultimately led to the equaliser. We also saw for the Western Sydney Wanderers young Abraham Majok come on for Oriel Riera. Riera, though, wasn't too keen to go off. But again, he should have buried his chance similarly inside the six-yard box. What do you think, though, if Alexander Bum-Yohan hadn't have been subbed off, do you think that the Wanderers could have maybe even won that game?
He's an X-factor type player. He can turn a game just like that. He can produce that moment of magic that can win you a game. So who knows? He might have been able to do so, but knowing Sydney FC really came out firing after that goal, and the match went towards 97 minutes, so there was plenty of opportunities late. So I'm sure the Wanderers would be quite pleased that they were able to take it to Sydney, although given how well they've performed recently and the fact that Sydney are coming off an Asian Champions League match as well, I think the Wanderers would be quietly disappointed that they weren't able to get maximum points there.
And get over the line, still winless in the Sydney Derby in 2 years. It's incredible.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to that first Sydney Derby at Bankwest Stadium. We know that officially opened during the week, and there was plenty of social media footage of people getting nice and close in the stadium and people sharing photos from their seats. And it's very exciting.
I didn't like the rugby goalpost, though.
No, that needs to be changed. You need to put football goals there, and then I think that stadium will be completely set and ready for action. One of the other games on Saturday night, which had plenty of a massive impact on the league table, was Melbourne City and Adelaide United. And as far as nil-all draws go, I think this was quite entertaining. Both teams had great chances to win. Jamie McLaren hit the post. Harrison Delbridge probably had the two best chances of the match. And then just when you thought it was going to perhaps fizzle out and not really have anything. Craig Goodwin had a great chance from the set piece, and Eugene Galekovic made a tremendous save, a last-ditch save on the line, and an important result for Adelaide United. It sees them jump into fourth, temporarily that is, because there is still two games remaining. Out of Adelaide, Wellington and Melbourne City, Louise, who do you see in the best position at the moment to finish fourth?
Best position to finish fourth.
With two games left.
Let me just have a look as to who they have coming up next round.
So Adelaide play Melbourne Victory and Wellington are at home to Melbourne City. So two massive games considering all those sides are fighting for a spot inside that top six.
Adelaide United after that in their final round play Brisbane Roar away, whereas Wellington Phoenix play Perth Glory away and Melbourne Victory are away to the Western Sydney Wanderers. I think it's really anyone's game at this point, isn't it?
I think Wellington's got the toughest draw out of the teams inside the top six, but they do have Mark Rudin at the helm, and he's a fantastic coach. They did lose two in a row, though, so not quite sure exactly what's happening there. They will look to bounce back, certainly, in what is an elimination final curtain raiser against Melbourne City this week.
You've really got a feel for Wellington Phoenix at this point in time. I certainly do, given the news that broke today regarding Mark Rudin. He will depart the club at the end of the season after, you know, a period of time that he has really brought a lot of success to Wellington and the team across the Tasman. So it's a shame to see him depart the club despite the success. Is this having some sort of an impact on the team now?
It could, I'm not sure. It is, or it has been, football's worst kept secret, hasn't it? And I'm sure the players are mature enough and to accept that this has happened. And I'm sure that their sights are firmly set on the finals. And it's not as though Mark Rudin has just got up and left now. He's still going to see this season through. And he wants success at the Wellington Phoenix. He just because he's informed the club that he will no longer be there from next season, it doesn't mean that his passion isn't there. I think his heart is firmly set on doing something special at the Wellington Phoenix this season, because that's what he set out to do from day one.
But isn't it more mentally tough on the players now that he is still there and that he won't be there next season, given that they do have finals just around the corner, their first final series that they've made in many years now?
Yeah,
you don't want to see it go the other way.
Look, you can only speculate at this point, but in football, as David Dome said today, players and managers come and go all the time. But in saying that, though, he was quite happy and he did celebrate the impact that Rudin has had at the club this season.
Well, look, you know, he's made a difference since he's come here. But we also understand that he's a father, you know, and I have kids. It's about the same age as Mark's kids. And I know how difficult it is when you're balancing these kinds of roles and to balance home and life. And how he's done it with his family in Sydney is, to be honest, it's actually a credit to him that he's managed to do it this far. So I totally understand his decision. And do you know what? I actually respect it.
Wellington Phoenix's David Dome chatting there. Following the news surrounding Mark Rudin, he's announced that he will be departing the club at the end of the season.
There you go. And as we mentioned, it's not no real shock considering he has been linked to Western United as well as Southwest Sydney MacArthur. So interesting to see what develops there, because he's a top manager, as we've seen this season. And what he's done at the Wellington Phoenix has been extraordinary. The job is not over just yet, though. There's still plenty of football to be played, and none more so bigger than what is a great curtain raiser to the finals. They take on Melbourne City in what could be the first elimination final, because, of course, Wellington can still finish fourth and City could finish fifth. So that could be a great preview for that game. And we saw in the Adelaide United-Melbourne City game on the weekend, the intensity was rife from the word go. Both teams really came out to win, which is exactly what you want. It really had that finals-like atmosphere on the field, that's for sure.
And Melbourne City, there's still an injury cloud hanging around
quite a few players, actually.
Bart Schenkerfeld, one of their key players, who has seen them, you know, keep an insane amount of clean sheets this season and a great goal difference, something that they haven't done in a while.
Well, they've got one of the best defensive records for a reason, and he is such an integral part of that back four, or at times a back five. So they're confident that he will be right for finals. He actually was a laid out due to that injury. So
lucky Richie Delatt could slip in.
Yeah, Richie Delatt is a fantastic player. He's done so well, and he's another one who's been under an injury cloud for so long this season. There are also a bit of doubt over someone like Dario Vidicic, who hasn't played in quite some time, and there are a few players, Jacopo La Rocca, another one, so a few of their defensive players, not 100% just yet, but with finals just around the corner, and considering City have two massive games and a great opportunity to finish inside the top four, you'd really think that they'll be really banking on a lot of those depth players and players 12 through to 15 to really step up in these crucial games.
And moving on to Melbourne Victory, they hosted the Central Coast Mariners and were able to take the 3 points in the 2-1 win.
Barbarousis, the Pistons are pumping as he feeds it to Toivonen, and now Cam Sober back to Toivonen. What a gorgeous goal! Been tripped, it's a penalty. Deng Leg Simon and the Mariners will go to the spot. Everyone waits on the line. A chorus of boos for Matt Simon. Can he bring the Mariners level? Yes, he can. Matt Simon equalises and he gives the shuckers to the Victory North Terrace. Barbarousis, first touch was good. On the turn.
With thanks to Fox Sports, Melbourne Victory defeated the Central Coast Mariners 2-1. Touching on that, the penalty. I don't know, Athos. I don't know if that was a penalty because I didn't see any contact from Thomas Deng on Matt Simon.
No, from the angle that was shown for the replay, it looked like Simon just tripped over his own feet. And you saw Thomas Deng straight away put his hands up like the players do to say, no, I didn't touch him, I didn't touch him. It's the oldest trick in the book. And when you saw it in live from the angle that it was on TV, you might have thought that he clipped him, but that angle shown by the replay, it didn't look too good for Matt Simon. It looked like he had fallen over by himself. So interested to see, well, it's quite interesting that they didn't go to the VAR and there was no on-field review for that decision. But as the game ended, Victory were able to find a second goal through Jorg Niedermeyer, something out of nothing, really. I think that cross was intended for Ola Toivonen, and he was in perfect position at the back post to head that home. But Niedermeyer stuck a head in, and it was 2-1 for the Victory. And I thought, given what they dished up on Wednesday, I thought this was a much better performance and a good response as well, considering they were in dire need of a win.
They needed to turn things around following that defeat in the Asian Champions League. Jorg Niedermeyer scored his first A-League goal. Quite fittingly, it was a terrific goal, but even more terrific and beautiful was the opener, which went to Ola Toivonen.
A great team goal, and that's exactly what Melbourne Victory is capable of doing. Great to see, I think it was Elvis Kamsoba who got the assist as well, so that'll do so much for his confidence, and I'm sure the Favak Sake guys will touch on that later on in the program, in the hour they come on at 6 p.m.
A really well earned victory for the Victory. Mm-hmm. They had to really take it to the Mariners, who put up a fighting display right until the end, and that in itself is a reflection of the impact that Alan Stajic has had in his short time there.
Yeah, he's been great, hasn't he? And it'll be very excited to see what the future holds for the Mariners, and they're playing some competitive football under him there. And that was on display last night too, in a game that you would have thought Victory would have won quite comfortably.
Well, that's it. But again, you can't be complacent.
No.
I don't think that in this A-League climate you can afford to be complacent against teams, no matter where they're, you know, on the bottom of the table or, you know, midway through. I think that you've got to respect every team because every team poses a challenge. And if you are complacent, you're only going to do yourself a disservice.
And we saw that the Mariners came very close to equalising late in that contest as well. And Matt Acton produced one of the best saves I think he's ever produced and one of the best saves we've seen this season. So it puts a few question marks as to who will lead Victory from the back once the final starts, whether Lawrence Thomas is fit. You'd expect he would slot back in once he's 100% though, but Matt Acton has certainly done his job for the time being.
And stranger things have happened.
Mm.
I think that Matt Acton, it's great to see him get a win under his belt following that defeat in Asia, because that wouldn't have been too easy on him at all.
No, not at all. And it was also good to see that Carl Valeri, he did announce his retirement during the week and he was able to get a win on the weekend. And he is someone who I think the Victory have sorely missed this season when he hasn't been there, because he's such an integral part of that midfield. He's essentially the anchor. He's not afraid to put in a tough challenge, and he's left behind an incredible legacy at Melbourne Victory and as well as in Australian football.
And we touched on Elvis Kamsober, the MPL product mm-hmm. that's come through. Look, to me, and watching that game, Melbourne Victory against the Central Coast Mariners, you can really see how much Elvis has earned his spot in this team. And not only earned his spot in the team, but also gained the trust of his teammates, because they're willing to, quite frankly, pass the ball to him.
Yeah, well, he's an excitement machine. And even in previous games, we've seen him get into fantastic positions and does so much on the ball. Because he is so slight and so small, it's such an awkward matchup for him. Defenders don't know what to do with him. It's so easy to foul him when he's on the ball, because he's so quick. And if you put a foot out of line, you are going to trip him inside the box or trip him wherever. So he's a very difficult player to match up on, and is why that he's often put on late in the game when Victory either need to win or they're trying to hang on, because he can just cause so much damage in that attacking third.
And it's mainly because of his unpredictability.
Mm. And we're yet to see a goal from Elvis, and we know he's got that trademark...
He came close,
backflip.
Though.
Oh, he's come very close on many occasions, but he's got a trademark backflip celebration that he has done countless amount of times for Avondale, so keep an eye for that. Could you imagine a backflip in a grand final? I think that would be something special.
I've seen it in the flesh already.
There you go. And a big few weeks for Victory. They, of course, can still finish second with Sydney not being able to win, so they will have that motivation heading into their last few games.
And talking of young players, one player who I think young players should watch and look up to
and
is...
And emulate?
Ola Toivonen. Just the quality he brings week in, week out, both on the ball and off the ball, is just fascinating to watch.
You can't teach what he's got, and that comes with playing at the highest levels and playing and scoring in World Cups. So I'm sure the young Victory players, as well as the more experienced guys, have really looked to take plenty of leaves out of his book, because he's such an imposing presence too. He's so tall inside the box. And
that makes him difficult to mark.
Yeah, and I think I remember when the Wellington Phoenix came to Melbourne, they actually looked to target Toivonen and really looked to get inside his head. And you can see his experience. Maybe some players not quite used to that kind of... antagonising behaviour, it would have gotten to them. But because he's played at that high level and he's used to defence getting inside his head and really in his face, it didn't seem to bother him. Speaking of young players, there have been some big developments out of the A-League's newest side, Western United, who have announced the signing of three players, Jonathan Aspropotamitis, Connor Payne and Joshua Cavala. They haven't made it easy for us reporting on the game. They've signed players with difficult names to spell and pronounce. Aspropotamidis joins Apostolos Stamatolopoulos and Dylan Pireas and a whole range of good young players. And they're really starting to build a good squad down there in Tarnate.
Yes, they made the announcement this morning that the two Central Coast Mariners players were on their way to Western United for next season, which will be interesting to see how that goes. But they are developing a nice squad. They round out the 10th players that they have now, or 10 players that they have now signed for the squad. So more to come. But a great starting point.
A great starting point. We know a lot about Jonathan Aspro and Connor Payne, who we've seen in the A-League, but not so much Joshua Cavala. Is there anything that you could tell us about him?
A midfielder from Melbourne City's youth, and he was signed with Melbourne City on a scholarship deal, but given the, you know, competitiveness at the moment in Melbourne City for spots in the midfield, he hasn't broken into the squad, so it's really no surprise to see that he has sought other opportunities elsewhere. Western United, luckily enough, have given him an opportunity. But he has been at Melbourne City for quite some time now.
And just 19 years old as well. He's been playing in their under-21 side. I think he's gotten 4 assists in their campaign this season.
That's right, in the NYL as well.
So he's done very well. One of the players I'm very excited to see is Apostolos Stamatopoulos at Western United. He is still quite young as well. And he comes there, and you'd expect him not to be the main man as such, but you expect him to have a big impact at Western United, similar to what he's been able to do at Adelaide United in the last few weeks.
It's always a question that you want answered but never really goes to plan sometimes, because I feel like it's dependent on the players you have around you as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you can be successful at one club, but does that translate into success at another club? It's a different story. It depends on how the coach, who we don't even know, is going to play, what kind of style he wants to play, which other players he has around him. So we'll see what he does at Western United. How much game time he gets, that's another question.
Yeah, and of course we do have a tendency in Australia to really get excited when a new striker or a young striker is starting to make some headway. He still is, of course, very young, but a very bright future, as do the three players that Western United signed today.
Any more news on that front?
Not on Western United, but we've got news coming out of the FFA and one of the working groups, I believe.
Yes, we do. They've endorsed the new league's working group proposals.
Yeah, their recommendations. And they've actually set a deadline. Chris Nicholls said he was hopeful for, that an agreement to establish a new governance model that encompasses the A-League, W-League and the National Youth League will be reached by June 30. So it's good to see that they've set a timeline that is within the next 2 months. And Crispin Murray and Joseph Carozzi have been appointed by Chris Nicholls to oversee the next stage of negotiations. And there were quite a few recommendations made by the new league working group. So there will be plenty of negotiating to come over the next 2 months. But it's good to see that one of the big issues prior to Chris Nicholls stepping in and with the old FFA board was that there was hardly any transparency. There was no real timeline set. And as we've seen here, they've endorsed the proposals and the recommendations, and they've set us a date where we can expect something to happen, which is, I think, it's a good start.
It is a good start because there's plenty of things that need to be ticked off, but slowly moving forward and taking the steps to get there. But I think it's a massive thing to tackle, so these decisions can't be done overnight.
That's exactly right. And just before we move on, I stumbled across a bit of information on Twitter that our good friend Andrew Howe, one of the best statisticians in all of Australia, something that he tweeted. He said that the last time Perth Glory won a premiership back in 2004 against Sydney United, Liam Reddy was the opposition keeper. He was between the sticks for Sydney FC. And he said the previous time that they won, the previous time before that, when they won the premiership back in 2002, Liam Reddy was suspended, and of course he was playing for Parramatta Power at the time, and he's been on fire with his Liam Reddy facts as of late, Andrew House. So very much looking forward to see what other pieces of information he brings up and surfaces for the rest of the campaign.
Yeah, we heard from Liam Reddy last night, Perth Glory's first choice goalkeeper at the moment, and he was absolutely delighted to finally win some silverware, you know, after such a long period of time.
18 years, quite a number of A-League clubs, and I think aside from Brendan Santelab, I think he deserves it more than anyone.
Do you think that Ivan Franić will go down in Perth Glory folklore now?
I think so. It's quite a very important goal. It's one that he'll certainly never forget. But I think if he does it in a grand final, I think they'll certainly make a statue of him. Or whoever scores that a winning goal, should they make the grand final, of course. So they'll have to get past an opponent in a semi-final. But should Perth Glory win the grand final, I think they'll erect a statue of whoever scores that winning goal.
We know that Sydney FC have beaten Perth already
They
once.
Have, in Perth.
What happens if they beat them again? And then what happens if it's a Perth Glory Sydney FC semi? How do you think that would go?
They won't meet in the semi-final because if Sydney FC finish second, they'll host a semi-final of their own. I think the only other time they'd meet would be in a grand final. But I think Perth would be a bit nervous, since it's very rare that Sydney FC go into games as underdogs. And I really think under Steve Corica, they'll really embrace that tag. A lot of teams are actually galvanised, especially the good sides. When the good sides go in as underdogs, they really embrace it and they wear it as a badge of honour. And I think Sydney FC will really do that and will really look to take the game to Perth Glory should they meet in the grand final. So it will be a very interesting few weeks because, as we know in the finals and as we found out last season, when it comes to finals football, anything can happen. You only have to be off your game by 1% to go from contenders to ultimately pretenders.
But that's it. And given that Sydney FC have had the wood on them so far this season, how would that affect them mentally if Sydney FC did beat Perth Glory this week?
I think if Sydney FC beat Perth Glory this week, I think their confidence will go through the roof, and that belief will internally will be as high as it's ever been. And don't forget, they've put quite an impressive showing midweek against Shanghai SIPG, and Steve Corica said that if they play like that, they will dominate any opposition in the A-League. So we're very much looking forward to seeing if that Sydney FC will turn up for the remaining games to come.
That's a big question, if they can turn up for the remaining A-League games to come too in regular season before we hit finals. Remember, you can get involved at any time by giving us a call on 03 99 44 99 99, or you can tweet to us at FNR_radio. Or if you are joining us on Facebook Live, hello to everyone who is. We have had a few comments come through, Athos. One from Matt, hello to you. He said, good to see all these young kids getting signed. Hopefully get some game time. Can only be good for Socceroos, etc. in the future. I agree with that.
Well, we've spoken a lot. I know you've spoken a lot about young players being given opportunity, and the fact that Western United are very slowly and steadily building an identity for themselves, as we saw the Western Sydney Wanderers, and they haven't really gone out and signed players who've been in the system for so long. They're willing to give these new players a go and creating new household names, not necessarily relying on players from other clubs or just random players from here or there, which you need. You need experience in your team, but it is exciting that they're willing to give new players a go, and they're putting their faith in these players to be the inaugural, as part of the inaugural team, and as being part of that first generation of Western United players.
Well, that's exactly right. It's nice to see, and it's refreshing to see new faces come into the side rather than recycling old talent.
And new players coming to the system too, and that's one of the benefits and one of the big exciting points in talking about expansion is you create a lot more pathways for players who might previously have been spending time in National Youth League sides or may not have been seen by scouts, but now you're given more opportunities. Teams like Western United and whoever else comes into the A-League are really going to be looking for that next big thing, and their scouts are going to be searching far and wide and places that other A-League clubs haven't been because they want to have the edge over all the other teams. So if you're a player within the system at 18, as young as 16, I think you've got a great opportunity at one of these new clubs coming in.
Ivan has also come through on our Facebook Live. Hello to you. He said, Lee Broxham, if named in the squad, will play his 350 game for Melbourne Victory in all competitions, I'm assuming in this upcoming round against Adelaide United.
And what an opponent to do it against as well, considering Lee Broxham has had plenty of matches against Adelaide United, a number of classics too, including grand finals. And I couldn't think of a better opposition for Lee Broxham to play game number 350. I think we're talking about statues before. If anyone deserves one at Melbourne Victory, it's Lee Broxham. I think he really epitomises Melbourne Victory. He's a cultural icon among Victory fans. The way he just wears his heart on his sleeve is unparalleled. I think he's really embraced what Melbourne Victory means to a lot of people, and he's a great servant. He's been a great servant for the club.
Where would you put the statue? Gosh's Paddock?
Yeah, Gosh's Paddock. There's one of Puskas outside Amy Park, and I'm sure that there's plenty of room for plenty more. So one outside Amy Park, I think, would be just fine for Lee.
Athos, we're going to move abroad for the time being because there is lots of news going on overseas. And I'll still keep it Australian-related for the time being before we go into have a look at what happened in Europe at the weekend. Plenty of action there. But one of our favourites, 20-year-old winger Daniel Arzani, has actually returned to training with Celtic following his awful ACL injury he
Fantastic
did last
news.
Year.
Fantastic news. And we saw him miss the Asian Cup because of the ACL injury, but heartbreaking. And we know sometimes players, it can take some time to get back to their best after horrific injuries. So fingers crossed that he is fully recovered and he's willing to, he's got that faith and confidence in his body, because he's a superb talent. He's incredibly fast, and we're very much looking forward to see what the future holds for Azani. And given that we have now entered the next cycle of World Cup and Asian Cup qualifiers, I'm sure Graham Arnold has him in his sights to be an integral part of that Socceroos team going forward.
He does. I can confirm that because, well, especially in the Olyroos, because Graham Arnold did say that if we have a fit Daniel Arzani, he will be included in the Olyroos team, which is a no-brainer for me. And if you're going to try to qualify for the Olympics, something which we haven't done in
quite some time.
Include Daniel Arzani, one of the best attacking wingers we have.
And it'll be a massive confidence boost and a morale boost for the other players as well, considering the talent that Arzani is. And to see him come back from injury and be able to perform the way we know he can, I think it'll be a massive boost internally for the squad as well.
And even to link up with some former Melbourne City youth players. We know that James Delianov was also...
There's plenty of chemistry within that team, absolutely.
Denny Genro, a lot of those players he's already played with, so he would have that chemistry there. Great to hear, though, that he is back returning to training. In England, Athos, we've heard that one of the Australian coaches, Joe Montemurro, is actually on the cusp of becoming the first Australian to clinch a significant title overseas, because Arsenal are just two wins away from securing the Women's Premier League crown.
And he's such a good coach, isn't he? We've had him on the station plenty of times, and he's so passionate about football as well. So, and he is, if you're going to look at Australian coaches at the moment, he'd be high on the list in terms of quality and what he's been able to do. And I think this would just cap off what's been a great career for Joe.
Well, that's it. And Arsenal women have actually finished runners-up in the FA Women's Cup and won the Continental Cup under Joe's watch. So he's already starting to have some success, and this would just top it all off.
That it would. And as we know, women's football in England is continuing to reach new heights. We know that the Lionesses are in a good position heading into this World Cup. But where do you see them in terms of all the teams, the favourites for the upcoming World Cup?
They'd be up there, for sure. They'd be up there. It's going to be difficult come the FIFA Women's World Cup, because some of the opponents or some of the players in Joe Montemurro's Arsenal team are in the England squad. So the Matildas will be coming up against these players. But it's great to see that the Matildas are already over in the NWSL. A great segue, Athos, because round one in the NWSL did kick off at the weekend. And as I was going to say, the Matildas are playing over there in America, or well, a number of them are. So it's great that they're already coming up against some of these players in the US who will be featuring at this summer's FIFA World Cup in France.
That's right. And Sam Kerr scored the first goal for season 2019. She scored her 17th goal for Chicago. And the commentator actually... it was a bit of a slip of the tongue. He referred to the team as the Chicago Kerrs after she scored that first goal. A fantastic finish. Clinical vintage Sam Kerr, and she's off to a flyer in the National Women's Soccer League.
And it was also great to see one of her longtime teammates, Caitlin Ford, also getting on the score sheet for her respective club, Portland Thorns.
There you go. And speaking of Australian players scoring goals, Socceroos midfielder Tom Rogic scored his first goal in quite some time for Celtic over the weekend. They defeated a nine-man Aberdeen 3-0 in the Scottish Cup final. So another bit of silverware there for Celtic and Tom Rogic. And he's been on the end of a fair bit of criticism lately, Tom Rogic. So it's good to see him score his first goal since October. And we do know he got injured for a bit there, which would have hindered his performances as well. But this is a great step in his career, and we're hoping that he can get back to that form that saw him become one of Celtic's most dangerous players at the beginning of the season.
Most definitely. And a long time between drinks for him.
Yeah, a few months. And we saw at the Asian Cup, while he was good and he scored that important goal, but he was carrying an injury.
A niggling injury.
Like half the other Australian players there. So a fully fit Tom Rogic is not only great for Celtic, but it's great for Australia as well, because I feel like it's sort of he's in a similar boat to how Harry Kewell was. While Harry probably got more out of his career playing in Liverpool and playing every year in the Champions League as well as Leeds, we've probably been unfortunate that we haven't been able to see the best of Tom Rogic, because every time we seem to get somewhere and progress a little bit further, he gets injured. So we're hoping that he can stay fit for as long as possible and really get, we can really get the best out of him at international level as well.
Agree with that. Moving on to the English Premier League, unfortunately it wasn't so good for his Socceroos teammate and Australia's first choice goalkeeper, Matty Ryan, who was on the receiving end of a 5-0 loss.
Yeah, they were reduced to 10 men, Brighton and Hove Albion, especially at home. It's very rare that teams lose 5-0 as it is, and to do so at home against Bournemouth, who's currently sitting 11th on the Premier League table. So a massive win for Bournemouth. They should be congratulated. And it amazes me how they remain to do so well in the Premier League. I think every season they're tipped to go down, but Eddie Howe has got them, is working wonders with them, and they're all of a sudden they've established themselves as a mid-table side, the Cherries, and they're looking to reach new heights every season.
And they are just 5 points now, I'm talking about Brighton, from the drop zone. That's not looking good. Hopefully Brighton won't be going down this season.
No, and we know that I think if they do go down, I'm sure Matt
Three games
Ryan,
to play.
I don't think they will go down. I think they're good enough to be able to get enough points to be safe. We know that Cardiff City is currently occupying 18th spot. Fulham and Huddersfield have already been relegated, but five or six games to go. Brighton also do have a game in hand. So I think they're in a good position to stay up. They have lost their last three games, however, so they do need some points soon. Southampton is in the discussion as well, but they're probably one win away from safety, as are a few other teams. We know that 40 points is that magical number that teams try to get to, and it all but ensures that that safety in the Premier League.
And at the other end of the English Premier League table, the race is still on for the EPL title. We saw that Raheem Sterling scored twice as Manchester City came to beat Crystal Palace 3-1, which is great to see. But unfortunately for them, Mo Salah also managed to put away a wonder strike for Liverpool.
Yeah, his goal was superb. And I think they had his goal and a very similar attempt he had while playing at Chelsea. And his attempt for Chelsea ended up in row Q in the stands. And his attempt for Liverpool ended up in the back of the net. And he has really answered a lot of his critics in the best possible way. Many were calling him a one-trick pony, a one-season wonder, but he's backed that up this season after recovering from quite a terrible injury in that UEFA Champions League final. And Liverpool sit 2 points ahead of City on top of the Premier League table, albeit City have a game in hand in this title race. There is it's going to go down to the final day, I think. And that win against Chelsea was so significant for Liverpool because, as we know, the build-up was all revolved around that Steven Gerrard slip a few years ago, and this was...
That was going viral around social media.
It was in the build-up to this game, and it really, I think, this was a massive mental win for Liverpool as much of a physical win as well. So I think they'll take plenty out of this game and hope that Manchester City drop points in the next game, which will see them in the box position to win their first bit of domestic silverware for quite some time.
And elsewhere in Europe, in Italy, Juventus will actually have to wait to wrap up the Serie A title, unfortunately, because they shockingly lost 2-1 to Spal, which is just incredible because that is Spal's first Serie A win against Juve in 62 years.
An incredible statistic, and Juve are still in the box seat, and they will win the Serie A. And
we'll just have to wait another couple of days.
We will have to wait another couple of days, although I think the Serie A at the moment, it's heating up between 4th to 6th, and that's generally where the most exciting football has been played over these last few years. 4th is currently occupied by AC Milan, but Roma is hot at their heels. Only 1 point separates them, and Atlanta, Torino and Lazio, even Sampdoria, can still finish fourth mathematically. So lot to play for those sides too. And as we know, Champions League football is up for grabs. And Milan, who have been absent from the Champions League for quite some time, will be really incentivised to get back in there, considering they've won it so many times.
And Allegri was resting some key players like Cristiano Ronaldo ahead of this week's upcoming return leg and decider in the UEFA Champions League against Ajax. And finally, before we wrap up the show, Athos, we actually saw in Ligue 1 a similar story. PSG actually fell to their worst defeat in 19 years. Yes, 19 years as they conceded five goals, which is just incredible when they took on Lille. So not good for them. They'll have to wait as well to wrap up the Ligue 1 title. But it's all to play for at the moment in and around Europe.
Yeah, PSG are 17 points clear of Lille. But again, that's a massive thumping for them. It's quite an embarrassing loss too.
Mbappe wasn't too happy post-match. Let's just say that.
No, he didn't look all too pleased there.
Well, Athos, that's all we've got time for today, but thank you so much for your company, and thank you for your company at home. If you've missed any of the show, head to FNR's website or FNR's SoundCloud. I'm Louise Taffer with Athos Syrianos. We'll see you again tomorrow night.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.